Today the Torah portion is Teruma. It is just the parsha of Teruma, not a combined Teruma Tetzaveh. And in the Gutnik Chumash, which is on page 510, this class is given in memory of Blima Pestel, Bas of Pesach HaLevi, and in memory of my father-in-law. From the beginning of the parsha, before we get to what I prepared, and it is that if we go just past the donations, it then starts talking about making the Ark on page 512. And on the top of the Ark, page 514, it says as follows, making the Keruvim. In English they say cherubs, whatever that means, but Keruvim, this is what it is. It says in verse 17, to make a cover, a board that's a cover, and from that cover should be made va'asita, and you should make shnayim Keruvim, zohov, made out of gold. And then it goes on to say in verse 20, "V'ha'yu ha'kruvim perse knofayim l'malo, seichim bekanfeim." They should have wings that are spread over the top of this flat cover. And then it goes on to say, "Upneim ish faces facing each other." So Rashi tells us this means that we have, as you can see here in the picture, which is not in the recording, obviously. A golden box. How the golden box was made is in and of itself a lesson in and of itself. And I believe in one of the earlier classes of this parsha, Simi spoke about the box itself being made of three layers of gold, wood, and gold. As you can see in this picture here, there's a golden box on the inside, golden flat cover, golden outside, wood on the inside. What that means, right? But today we're going to talk specifically about the question, you know, the second commandment is about not having any images. So, if there's not going to be any images, how could we have, in the holiest of holies, how could we have the place which it states that from there God's voice speaks to Moses? From between these two images of a boy and a girl with their wings hovering over the top, something is just doesn't sound right, because, you know, we don't believe in the sanctity of images. We believe that there's a one almighty, all-present, all-powerful, non-visible God. And why would such imagery be used? In other words, why give a wrong impression? Why do, as a matter of fact, let's say it's simple. Why do it? So the answer is, the first part is that if this is in the Holy of Holies, it must mean that this is critical and central and an underpinning to everything in Yiddishkeit, which it is. And I'd like to explain it as follows. And really, this is something that around here you hear about it a lot. But this is really in the physical plane. This is really the root of it. And that is, the Almighty made the world with male and female. And why would He make male and female? The Baal Shem Tov asks. I mean, the Almighty could have made, there should have been three species, 20 species, one species. Why male and female? I mean, we know the physical of how it works, whether it's humans or animals or trees, but that doesn't answer why would God make it that way. The reason God made male and female is because God wants us to have two approaches in our march through this world as we serve God. One should be a male approach and one should be a female approach. And male and female are opposites which come together. So let's explain it like this. Let's talk about men and women, which is really very simple. Men and women, we were originally created as one being. The first Adam, and we actually have in the recordings, one of the classes, I think it's class 0 or 01, I don't remember. It's the very first class. Because we started the Torah portion of Noach, and I called it 001, or I think so, 001. So I made this the number before it. So in the order, when you go online, it should appear first. And we specifically spoke about this concept in that parasha, how we were created as one being, male and female, and then God divides them. Again, why animals were all made in twos. Many of the trees were made male and female. But man, you have to do the long route. Why? To bring about this point. So what's really male and female? Now, it should be pointed out that every male has female elements and every female has male elements. The question is, which is dominant? So what is the meaning of male? What's the meaning of female? And then we'll go to the Ark of the Covenant and why specifically it has to be there, but also why it has to be hidden. Because this is the thing. The question emerges from, look, if we're not supposed to have images and we don't believe in images having power, why do what seems to be that in the Holy of Holies? But then we need to remember that the Holy of Holies, nobody ever went in there except for one man once a year. So if it's not visual, even though it's there, why do it? So we're going to explain all of that now. The dominant characteristic of male is projecting, giving. When I say giving, I mean in the sense of projecting forward motion. I don't mean in the sense of giving as in cultivation. That's something else. For example, exploring power. And I'm not talking about good or bad. Oh, Shikoyach, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'm not talking about good or bad right now. We're talking about in its generic form, and it could be used for good and it could be used for bad. So male is generally the characteristic of strength, of forward motion. Let's talk, for example, about the sun and the moon. Those who were at the yard site the other night, we heard something about it. The sun will call that as being a male characteristic. It shines its light, and therefore things can grow and so on and so forth. It's male. Now, female is dominantly receiving. Now, receiving, not in the sense of I need to receive, otherwise I'm dead, but in the sense of receiving and cultivating. And let's take a look, for example, in the human characteristic, just the way the mind works. And we'll see this male and female characteristic in all of us. So let's say an idea pops into our head. So the idea popping into our heads means from somewhere, from the superconscious, something pops into our head. So that's a male happening. Something projected into our head. Now we have to pause and we have to think about it and we think it through. And think it through can take 5 minutes, it could take 5 years. But this whole idea of developing, that is a female characteristic. Let's take it in the very physical world. So along comes a male and he projects something, and then it's cultivated for 9 months. You see what I'm saying? So that's male versus female. Let's talk about in the way we serve God, which means to say, when we say serve God, we don't necessarily mean in the shul praying. We mean how do you walk with life, through life with God? So here's a very simple thing. Let's say I'm on an airplane, or on a bus for that matter, or in an airport, and I see a Jewish fellow. I just get a sense that he's Jewish. Very often you can tell. So if I want to serve God in the male characteristic, then I'm going to take the initiative. Hey, how you doing? Etc. Are you a member of the tribe? However you would like to say it. Or do something like that. Some people say it that way. One guy once said, Are you of the Mosaic persuasion? Right? Yeah?
I usually just say Shalom Aleichem.
Yeah, right.
And if they know where I, then if they know.
Now the thing is, when you meet another Jewish person, you can connect with them. Now here is a very beautiful thought. I forgot which of the Rebbes said it, but our Rebbe repeated it many, many times. Maybe it was from our Rebbe or the previous Rebbe, maybe from an early one. When two Jews meet, something should come of it where a third Jew should benefit. Okay, so just take that idea. Okay, so now I meet somebody. I met a guy on the plane. This has happened many times. He's Jewish. In those particular cases, put on tefillin. Or sometimes you can just, whatever, say something nice. You can warm up a person. My point is, it's very easy in those situations to just stay in your own cave. All right? But if you want to serve God with a male characteristic, then you're going to take the initiative. Now, you realize, obviously, that you don't have to be a man to do this. A man and a woman can do this. We're talking about the in concept now. That's a male way of serving God. Okay, let's take a similar situation, and let's talk about the female way of serving God. So you meet another Jewish person, and they open up to you. Now, if that person opens up to you, you can decide, well, I'm here to sell Judaism. Let's say I'm thinking that way, right? So it doesn't matter what they say, I have a product to sell. You see, now what you're doing is you're supposed to be in the female mode and you're going into the male mode. In other words, if somebody's opening up to you, listen. Oh, tell me, etc. We all understand this idea of cultivating. And then, maybe we have something to say, maybe we don't. Very often, just the fact that we listened to somebody is just, it's like a lot of the weight just goes off. And maybe we do have something to say. Maybe the person is much younger than us, so we have a little bit of life experience to share. So you say something, and that is, if we want to really break it down, as in the mystical teachings, this is a subject essentially on every page of Hasidus. This general thing that I'm sharing with you now, that's how central it is. It's on every page. Everything is male, female. So you have, for example, when somebody, you know, finally bears their soul to you, let's say, and you listen, and you feel you have something to say, so now within the feminine mode, you have a male aspect, and you say something. Right? And now, the recipient intakes, and they develop, you see? So from being the cultivator, now you become the in the male mode. So this is an example of serving God between man and man. I use another example. Because we have this 6 days of the week and Shabbat. We all know Shabbat is called the Shabbat Queen. Why not the Shabbat King? Why the Shabbat Queen? Because 6 days, all of us, men or women, are really to be in the male mode. What's the male mode? To go out into the world. Don't hide in a cave in some monastery somewhere or in some, I don't know, wherever they hang out in some ashram and do whatever it is. But the Jewish way is go out into the world and serve God in the world. Not only that, be an example. Be an example. I've told this story before, but I really like it, and I'm going to share it with you again. In Israel, there's a tremendous amount of people by the bus stop, and they're all coming onto the bus. So the driver opens up the front door and the back door. Everybody comes in. So this way he's letting in people from the back door, or middle door, I guess. And he's relying on their trustworthiness to come forward with their fare or with their ticket to get it, you know, the whole punch on the ticket. So, a little kid, religious kid, so he moves up to the front and he, you know, waits in line to have his ticket punched. So he puts his ticket and the bus driver says to him in Hebrew, he says, "I already punched it." He says, "No, you didn't." "Yes, I did." Okay, just go on. Next. I already punched your card. No, you didn't. Anyway, bus driver is bigger. He's in charge. So this little kid, he sort of backs out and he's saying to himself, Ani lo yachol ze gneva. Ani lo yachol ze gneva. I can't. It's stealing. So the bus driver hears him say it a few times, like he's repeating to himself, and he pats him on the head and he says, Ze yafe, this is really nice. Takes his ticket and he punches it. Right? So my point is, you go out into the world and you do the right thing and you become an example of God on this world, really. You become, that's called Kiddush Shem Shemayim, sanctification of God's name. That's what we're to do for 6 days. So we can go out into wherever downtown or equivalent thereof. That's masculine. On Shabbat, it's completely different. The reason why, and this is in general terms, there's so many things on Shabbat we don't do. Because Shabbat, the mode is feminine. What is the mode? What does feminine mode mean? To be open to the sanctity that's available. For example, let's just understand what's happening at this very moment. Somehow, for whatever reason, I happen to be the one sitting here, and I'm sharing a thought. All of you are intaking it, right? So at this moment, I'm playing a male role, you're playing a female role. Now, when it goes the other way, and you say something and I'm listening, it goes the other way. So what I'm saying is that on Shabbat, there's sanctity that's available. So God says, stay away from all of those activities by which you... the word I'm looking for, give me a second, I want to use a certain word. Hang on. By which you cultivate, I'll use that word just because even though I've used it for the feminine mode, by which you explore and cultivate and harness, that's the word I'm looking for. In other words, stay away from all those activities by which you harness the world. That's for 6 days. That's the male role. You're in charge, you're harnessing. You make sure it goes like this and not like that. But on Shabbat, all of those things, there's going to be so many restrictions because this way all you could do is sit back and intake. For example, if you sit around the Shabbos table, family, friends, or here at a kiddush, let's say, of course we're speaking, but we're all in the feminine mode. There's an atmosphere that we're intaking. That is the theme of Shabbos. Coming to shul, in our shul we do a lot of singing. And the singing creates a certain atmosphere. So let's say you're one of those people who erroneously thinks that you are not able to sing. And I'm telling you straight out, almost everybody who thinks they can't sing is wrong, just because we live in the West where we learn to listen to popular music and not sing. But I tell you, you start singing, you'll get better at it. I stick that in just because, anyway, that's how it is. But anyway, my point is, you come to shul and there's an atmosphere. So you're intaking the atmosphere. This is serving God in the feminine role. Now the real purpose, okay, so I'm sorry. So now let's go to the Kruvim. The Kruvim are in a place, and we'll soon come to why it's hidden. They're male and female, and they're facing each other. Because what is all of this? Remember, the Mishkan, the tent of meeting, and eventually the Beit HaMikdash, is supposed to be the perfect example of serving God. Serving God, my life of serving God is supposed to be male and female. Okay, if I'm a male, then it's going to be tilted to the male side, more male than female. And if I'm a female, tilted female, more female than male. But my life is to be male and female. So here, we're saying the Ark of the Covenant, that this is how we are to serve God. We're supposed to have male and female. But there's a few things that are missing. One, it was just pointed out, and I may as well mention it now, that Rashi tells us that the faces were little children.
Yeah,
little children.
Of a child.
Yeah. Why of a child? I think on a very basic level that a child is free of sin. See, the minute you stop putting age to it, the minute you put age, age represents a sophistication of some kind, and it has to mean something.
But also, a baby face is non-gendered. I mean, you by looking at a baby's face, you can't tell if it's a girl or a boy.
So that's a very significant point. Let me say something to that. And I don't know the full answer. I want to say, how do you make a baby face exactly male and female? I don't know. But we do know that the idea is male and female, because it's not written anywhere.
It's not written in here.
It's not written anywhere, to my knowledge, that there should be any imagery of the male and female, you know, down below. As far as I know, that's not what it's about. But what I just want to say that when you have it in its freshness, it's, you know, the purity is there.
But the males, you know.
What's missing is that male and female are supposed to come together. And here, if you don't mind, and I'm saying this because all of you around the table could tell me a thing or two about what I'm going to say, but being that this is recorded and this could help somebody, I would like to say it. And that is, when a man and a woman get married, the purpose is for the male to somehow figure out, how do I become one with a female? And the female to figure out, how do I become one with a male? What does that mean? It means that men and women are very, very different. And if a man and woman are going to live in harmony with each other, then they have to reduce their self-centeredness. They have to reduce their self-centeredness. Okay. In general, young people get married, and if they were to do proper self-analysis, they would realize that they're into it, what's in it for me. Now, when you marry someone who's of the opposite gender, there are some things, fundamental things within living, that they are interested in that you are not. And being a man, I will give a very easy example. Like window shopping. Okay. Why don't you try torturing me with something else? All right?
I've gone through it. Don't worry.
So, but here's my point. It's an easy example to use. But if you realize that the purpose of taking one Adam, male and female, and dividing him into two entities, a male and female, and then God says, now I'd like you to come together in marriage where you can come together through effort, then you can go, if you're a guy, you can go window shopping and do the best you can. Right? And don't take out the mobile phone, etc. And, for again, speaking like a man, even though you never will fully understand it, try and understand flowers, for example. Okay, try, you know.
I think we heard that.
Yes, yes. And now I'd like to say something in the reverse. I'd like to say something to the women. So let's say you're newly married and your husband is very interested in some hobby or something, whether it's fishing or playing the guitar or whatever it is. Just because he's interested in something else doesn't mean he doesn't love you. You say, of course, because you're not 20.
It has to be a balance.
What I'm saying, therefore, and of course there could be many more examples, except that they dig too personal or too under the skin. But my point is, marriage is reduce your self-centeredness to make your life about the person you're married to. And ideally, if you think about it, if the man is trying to go crawl inside the woman's head, and the woman is trying to crawl inside the man's head, then you're in a very good place. And that's not easy. How long does it take? It takes a whole lifetime. I don't know if you ever arrive. So our sages tell us that when the marriage relationship between God and the Jewish people was good, the Keruvim, the boy and girl with the wings, would embrace. What does that mean?
Embrace what?
Each other. Embrace each other. Because the Keruvim, we're starting off with the original question. Why have imagery of a boy and a girl with wings and God's voice comes from there when we're not supposed to make any images and so on? So the point is that, first of all, let's understand what it means, and then we'll talk about it being non-visible. What it means is that marriage is the exemplar of your relationship with God. Because in the relationship between God and us, we, what's called in the mystical teachings, Knesset Yisroel, we're the wife and God is the husband. And if you read Song of Songs, which talks very explicitly about the love between a man and a woman, it's talking about the love between God and the Jewish people. So, for example, when it came for the men of the Great Assembly to determine which books were, what they say in English, canonized to become part of the Tanakh, there was a discussion concerning Shir HaShirim, written by Shlomo HaMelech, and many of the sages were afraid that people are going to do what some singers who speak Hebrew do today, and to use it for regular love songs. Now you realize that today's day and age, love songs don't mean love, right? Because if a song says, I can't live without you, it means that you're all about me, right? I need you to satisfy me, so I can't live without you. How you feel about it, we could discuss it over coffee. You understand? So those are not really love songs. They're infatuation songs or other songs. Sorry for being so negative, but I really have a strong opinion, as you just heard, about those songs. But that's a misuse of the words of Shir HaShirim that some people use those words for. Because love is about how selfless can I be for the person I'm married to. Because the word ahavo means to give. Hav means give. Ahav means I will give. Alef hey veis means I will give. Ahav. And you make it into a noun, it becomes ahavo, love. So this is the marriage relationship between God and us. And as I've said, spiritually speaking, I gave all the examples before. There are many more. And really everything in Yiddishkeit is either male or female or the unification thereof. Now, the ultimate union between male and female happens in private. That's why if a person is Torah observant fully, they're not going to kiss or hug their wife in public, not even in front of their children, because that's very private. And of course, you're not going to do that to other people who you're not married to, because what intimacy do you have with them? You're supposed to be married just to one.
But you do it man.
That's because if guys meet each other and they hug, right? So that does not have anywhere, that has nothing remotely connected to the intimacy between a husband and a wife. So my point is that happens, but it happens between closed doors. It's not only a matter, you'll excuse me, of doing something erotic in the view of others, but it has much deeper meaning. It means there is only you and me. That's the meaning of behind closed doors. There is only you and me. And I know I've said this before, and it drives me up the wall. How could people who understand what marriage is about sit together, and don't answer me, please, because it doesn't matter whatever the answer you think is. How could you sit together, husband and a wife, on a couch, watching a beauty pageant about how this other woman is beautiful? If you're married to a woman, she's the only woman whose beauty you should be concerned with, and not comparing them with somebody else. I'm sorry, that's the meaning of intimacy. Intimacy means there's only you and me. Therefore, what God is asking with the Ark of the Covenant, because that's our subject, and of course it has to be relevant, and there's very little that's as relevant as this general subject, And this is general, because the specifics, as I said, are on every page of Chassidus. This idea of male and female. I could go on for this forever. So therefore, all of the Jewish people knew that behind, in this inner sanctum, literally, in this room that's within a room, in the Holy of Holies, there is this Ark of the Covenant, in which there's a boy and a girl with wings. And when we have a good relationship with God, they embrace. And there's intimacy between us and God. It's not for us to see. So in other words, what God is saying is, of course, you cannot, in the second commandment, you cannot make images of this world to give them, and because it gives them any prominence as in idolatry. But in the truth, there must be somewhere in this world a physical expression of the intimacy between me and you, God is saying. There must be somewhere a physical expression of intimacy between you and me, but it has to be in such a way that you will never mistake it for a deity unto itself, for a false god. And for this reason, you need to make these keruvim. You'll notice that it says that the keruvim had to be made from one block of gold. In other words, this boy and girl with the wings, they were not soldered together. Rather, it was hammered out from one piece. Why? Because the whole point is that male and female is to come together as one. This is represented by the fact that the boy and girl on the cover of the ark was made of one piece. So now we understand that if God is going to communicate with Moshe, where is his voice going to come from? From the place of intimacy. In other words, like a husband and wife, what they may say to each other behind closed doors at a moment of intimacy. God, when God speaks to Moses, a message to the people, that's what he's doing. He's speaking from a place of intimacy. Okay, the question is, why, there's really two parts to the way you said it, and I'd like to address both of them. Why is it so extravagant, and why so much gold? Alright. So the first part is why so extravagant. I'd like to explain as follows. There is a concept unique to human beings. And if you don't mind, I'm going to, again, sometimes as you've noticed, I stick in extraneous points because I think it's good to do so. You know, we have been told by certain intelligent people that we are intelligent baboons, Homo sapiens. Well, there are many parts of us that have nothing to do with intelligence and that are unique to human beings. And I'd like to mention one of them. There's about 15 of them. For example, the appreciation of history and other such things. The appreciation of art. There is nothing logical about appreciation of art. Art, I'm going to use my own definition, because for many centuries, people have attempted to define it, which in itself is a statement that it's a non-definable. I like to refer to art as the message between the lines. If I say three words, less is more. So if you're a computer, then less is less, more is more. You say less is more. So from the computer's point of view, from pure intelligence point of view, you have said square, circle. That's what you've said. But if you're human, you appreciate a whole life's message about less is more. And to those who are listening who are younger, and if you wonder why sometimes people old enough to have wisdom will speak, but not so much. Less is more. Meaning to say, you're 20, you can talk about whatever advice in life for an hour, but if you speak maybe to a grandparent, and they'll just say a phrase or two. less is more. Wrapped up in that phrase can be years of experience. I'll use an example in business, so it's nothing to do with religion. Okay? If somebody says to you, partnership in business is a bad idea. Well, if I'm 25 or 32, I can tell you why it makes a lot of financial sense. But if I've had a little bit of experience of life, then I understand how many families have been torn asunder, friendships ruined because of partnerships. And I cannot tell you how many business gurus will tell you the same. My main point is, I don't get caught up with the details. My main point is, I'm defining art as between the lines. When I say less is more, in other words, somebody who has sage advice, they may say a short statement and there's so much in it. Having said that, why did God create this appreciation called art? I mean, here is something that I would like to see. I don't know if anybody's ever come up with a reasonable explanation. Why are people drawn to the water? Why are people drawn to mountains? Why are people drawn to sitting by a fire? Even though fire gone wild can kill people and things, right? Why is that? These are non-explicable things, especially in this part of the world where we have a combination of mountains and water. That is the art within nature. The reason I bring this up is because God created this world so that we can express what lies between the lines. What do I mean by that? You could look at this world and we say, well, we just go through all the motions and then we can be just like ants who are working or animals who do their thing, and just like mechanically, we can go through life mechanically. But God has a message for us that there's much more to life than meets the eye. There's all of that which is between the lines. In other words, the notion that there can be, for example, sanctity to life. If you just want to be mechanical about it, life is just a function of nature, and life is here, and the next day it's gone. There's nothing before, there's nothing afterwards. You can be very mechanical about it. But we go through life, and most normal people realize that there's some depth to life. The idea that there's something between the lines, that's really in the realm of art. If we are going to have a place on earth that human beings are going to build to serve God, in other words, the temple, then it is supposed to be an example of serving God in the regular world, even though only the Kohanim could go into the inside, and the high priest to the inside of the inside, and the Levites could only go so far. But what they did is telling us about life. So if we're going to have a temple, then it is going to be physically beautiful. Remember, what is beauty? You look at beauty, and I just want to say something which is just an observation of my own, and I don't know if this has any real meaning to it or not, but the old way of art used a tremendous amount of curves in the art. If you just for example, consider an ornate ceiling moldings, those if you go to those mansions that have, everything is curved. And today, in more modern, there's a lot of use of straight lines. That's a very general difference between the old way of art and the new way of art. And I've been for years and years, it's just like struck me, even though I don't know what to make of it. Have you take a look at the Mishkan, the tabernacle, it's filled with straight lines. And the temple itself of bricks, just the buildings, if you compare that, for example, those that have turrets and towers with round parts, there was a very definite squareness to the way the Beit HaMikdash was built. I don't have pictures right in front of me to bring out. So I don't know if that's meaningful or not. I don't know. I just mentioned it. But my point is, since the temple is supposed to be an example for you and me how to serve God, then it's going to be artistically stunning. Now, for some reason, which on the surface is probably as explainable as why mountains and water and a fireplace attracts people. Why a smile? Think about it. Why is a smile so magnetic? A computer, unless it's told that a smile means something, will never figure out that a smile has appeal. It just does. And it goes in the same category. All right. So the thing is, so therefore the Mishkan had to be stunningly beautiful. For some reason, gold, and we've seen this throughout the entire world, that gold really draws people. You know, there are some metals that are more rare than gold. Platinum, it's more expensive. But I don't believe that ever in history platinum is going to be used for jewelry the way gold is used. For some reason, it has a certain appeal. So the first thing is, why does it have to be so ornate? Because that's the message. The message is serving God is about deeper than just the service. And I'd like to say furthermore, God made us with an appreciation of beauty. And there is a definite message to us. And that is, just to turn on the clock. And that is, use beauty to serve God. What that means is very simple. And you've heard me say this so many times. Let's suppose you're doing window shopping. And you see an absolutely stunning outfit. Pretty expensive. Can you serve God with that? Yes. You might say, well, that's hedonistic. What's the difference between me and the Greeks? A Greek might look at the Greek, you know, the Hellenistic way, might look at it, oh, I'd love to have that outfit. Except that if you're going to serve God with depth or with art, that the way I'm explaining art, then what you do is you see, maybe I can use that for Shabbos, for Yom Tov, because I don't know what it's like to be a woman to look in a full-length mirror with a brand new outfit and you feel that it fits you perfectly. But I know that it says something. And if you do that because now you're getting ready for Shabbos, you know what you're doing? You're elevating that whole dimension of the world, which could be all about me, self-centered. Look at me, everybody look at me. I got an outfit you'll never find anywhere, etc. However you want to feel that way. Or you'll put it on even if nobody else is coming home. It's Shabbos, and you're going to stand in front of the mirror and you're going to put it on, you take out the creases and you put it on perfectly. So that's why the temple is so elaborate. Now why specifically gold? I'd like to put something on a bit of a deeper level. This is something that I'm sharing with you, which is an incomplete thought. Because Chassidus explains gold and silver in what I'm going to share with you now. And what I'm unclear is why it was mostly gold with very little silver. There's copper for other reasons, a little bit of copper, not much. Because the word the kesef. So kesef means silver, but kesef means desire, like nichsafti, like yearning. So kesef really represents a passion for God. And zohov is generally associated with fear of God, or awe. The fear is an interesting word, but the word awe, which is actually something what I had prepared to speak about, we'll see how much we get to it, about awe of God. So why would it be mainly gold versus silver? So I don't know the answer. I have some idea. Maybe it will relate to, if we have time, that we'll explain it. But I just want to say, it's something that's been on my mind for many, many years. As you know, there's certain ideas, they percolate in my head for years, and one day I figure out an answer. But I'm saying that gold specifically, zohov, which corresponds to the awe of God, has also mystical meaning, and I still need to do some work on it. I'd like to share with you in the last little bit that we have left about the curtains that covered the ark. So if you take a look at page 518. So it says in chapter 26 that for the Mishkan you should make 10 curtains. Vasisa v'tamishkan tase 10 yirat. 10 curtains, and you can see here in the picture, you see these lines here, that's where it's sort of hooked together. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Okay? So you have 10 curtains. And then it goes on to say that what it should it be made of? There's actually four specifics. It says shesh. Shesh is linen. Normally the word for linen is bad. And I don't think I'll have time to get to that, why that is. There's a huge deal about that. This is all from the Tzemach Tzedek, I have to say. As I've said many times, the Sefer Likutim, for those who listen to the recording, just look up Mishkan, and you'll see it's unbelievable what the Tzemach Tzedek has to say about this. So Moshe should be stan, it should be uscheles, and then it should be, and he translates this turquoise, vargomon, and it should be purple, vatilas shoni, and crimson wool thread. What I'd like to talk about specifically, with, because we only have a few minutes left, is about the Techeles, that's the sky blue. He calls it here turquoise, which is, I guess, pretty close to sky blue, and I'm not sure how he gets to that. But let's just say sky blue. In preparing for this class, I began to see an answer for something that bothered me for years and years and years, and I've even mentioned it on the classes in other years. We're told that for the tzitzis, we're supposed to have such a sky blue thread. Okay, we forgot how to... which amphibian to make the dye from, whatever the story is. Why should we have blue on the tzitzis thread? So it says in the Shema, or Isem Oisa, you're going to see the blue thread. Or Zechartem, and you'll remember, it's called Mitzvah Hashem, all of the commandments of God. So how come? So the commentaries say, because this is the color of the sea, you know, the sea, the blue sea, which reflects the blue sky, which reminds you to think heavenward. And I always was troubled. I mean, that's a bit of a convoluted message. I mean, maybe I should think of Pythagoras' theorem and it'll lead me to... like, what? I didn't get it. So for the first time, I began to get an answer by reading what the Tzemach Tzedek has to say about the curtains. Now, there were many layers of curtains on the Mishkan. Each one he goes into... He has so much on it. I didn't get through all of them, but I could see already that if I was going to do this one thoroughly, which I won't have time to, then maybe next time I would talk about the one from goatskin. Just amazing lessons. So what's the idea of a curtain in general? And again, I'm missing out many, many things, everything that's here. The word yirio means like stretched out, like an enormous canopy, kind of like the sky. Noita shamayim kayaria, that the Almighty, He expands the heavens like a yiria. Like yiria means, I guess, like, I'll use the word expands. In other words, in this Mishkan, you had the first layer of curtains and the color sky blue. The other colors we won't have time to talk about for sure, is reminding us that, and now I'm translating this in how it speaks to you and me. There is a way to go around this world doing what we do, but living with God awareness. When I say God awareness, I don't mean like you're davening when you're driving your car. What I mean is that you're driving and you're doing everything the right way, but it's all within the perspective that I'm here for God's purpose. And how is that? So in the Mishkan, where we're there to serve God, the first layer, if you're standing on the inside, the color that you see, amongst other colors, but you see the color of sky blue as a reminder that this world is totally awesome. I was speaking before about art, and I'm going to speak on a very practical level. You know, you can go through this world, let's say you go to the Rockies, or let's say right here at sunset, you go to sunset to Crescent Beach, and some days it's magnificent, unbelievable, and you could say wow, or you could say wow, look at God's world. You see, again, I'm sticking in a side point. I do not believe, and I've seen what people try to write on it, stupidity. I don't believe there's an evolutionary explanation for the existence of art in the world with all of its intricacies. God made this world such that we could look at the world and say, wow, there's a God who runs this world. You know what? You can be driving in a traffic jam from here to Vancouver, and you're saying, okay. So if you're like me, then you use that time, you're listening to audiobooks and other classes, which I've done for maybe thousands of hours over the years. But the point is, let's say you're irritated, and you'd like to be a little more remembering how the Almighty has stretched the heavens and the expanse of the ocean, right? Remember how God... Okay. Do you know what's involved in this phenomena we call highways and cars? Just think about it. And creativity and intelligence. In other words, there's an all-encompassing awareness that we can always tap into and to say, wow, look at this world that God has made. I'll show you an example right here on this table. So here on this table, there's this thin plastic. This way we don't have to worry about spills at all. But if you're like me, it kind of irritates the skin, you know, sweaty. But if you want to think about this in terms of being in awe of God, very simple. How many people have food to eat because plastic was invented? How many lives were saved, more accurately, because plastic was invented? Just think about that. I mean, it really boggles the mind. I mean, we can ask ourselves this question. I don't know the answer, but the fact that it's a question is in itself. Okay, did plastic save more people from starvation and give them fresh nutrition, etc., more people than were, for example, slaughtered in the 20th century? Now, I know that's a huge question. I don't know how to figure out the answer, but I'm saying that plastic is that far-reaching. I'm not saying just use plastic and destroy the environment. The fact is there's a function for plastic to save people's lives by giving them fresh food where they have none. That's it. There is such a thing. So I'm saying you can use everything. All right, here's a book. The Power of the Printed Word. I'm just saying you can use everything. So the idea of having in the canopy, that's the word I was looking for, kairia. Yuria means like a canopy. The idea of having a canopy, the fact that it's bad has its own meaning. I told you, it's big. We won't go into it. The fact that it was using sky blue color is to remember the expanse that God stretches over the world to give us a sense of awe, a sense of awe. So with that, I think it's 5:01. I think I'm going to finish, but just to leave us with this point, that every single detail of the Mishkan has a message for us. I happen to love these parashas, which on the surface, it's difficult to find relevance. And my favorite, to be honest, the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Chabad Rebbe, he just opens all the windows. He opens all the doors, explains it. Thank you very much.